Now, more Cap and Haw on Comcast SportsNet and WGN Plus.
It seemed like, I don't know what it was, but it seemed like we were sleeping there at the start. You know, their goals piled on, you know, mistake after mistake, and they capitalized on it, and that's what a good team's going to do. So we know we got to start better here tomorrow.
That's the man child, Brandon Saad. He'll need to play his best tonight along with his buddies in the room, Blackhawks and the Anaheim Ducks. And hopefully we can put some rigging tape over the mouth of a goof named Emilio Estevez.
Oh, what a goof.
Shut that idiot up.
Yeah, that's kind of
Hey, if you ever get a job to be in another movie again, won't be coming on any press junket through here, you jackass. All right, phones we go.
When you make Charlie Sheen look like the smarter brother.
It's unbelievable.
No, you're pretty stupid.
Unbelievable. Mark Potash, Chicago Sun-Times, joins us now. He's been following the Blackhawks' run, also covers the Bears. Potsy, good morning. How are you there, buddy?
Hey, Mark.
I'm doing great, David. Cap, good to talk to you guys again.
All right, your take on tonight. I mean, everybody looks at this series, I believe, and says, well, it's destined to go seven. Do you concur, or are you very concerned about tonight's game?
Well, both. I'm very concerned about this game, and I still think it'll go seven. You know, hockey's just so unpredictable that the Hawks, I think there's no doubt they will play better. No doubt in my mind they will play better in this game than they did the other night. But on the other hand, you guys know in hockey, they could outplay them from start to finish in this game, and they could lose 2-1. That's how unpredictable it is. So I do think the series is destined to go seven. I think the Hawks will find a way. But I think if they would have won, like I told you the other day, I think if they would have won the other night, I think they'd lose this game. I mean, that's how this is by far, in my opinion, been the most evenly matched series the Hawks have played in the 7 years they've been in the playoffs. I just think it's going to go the way. But you also, the unpredictability of hockey being what it is, like I said, they could play better and still lose. That's kind of disconcerting, I guess, for Hawks fans.
Mark, as much of a student of history as you are, and I think that, you know, we all both went into the other night well aware of the statistic that the Hawks were 14-0 in series where they were tied at 2 under Joel Quenneville. And so I think you expected them, and there was talk about it. There was an awareness that they needed to do what they, you know, wanted to do and start fast and all those hockey cliches and all those things that ring true. How do you explain the first period? How do you explain a team that is aware of how good they are under these circumstances, knowing what's at stake, performing like that?
Well, I think that 14-0 mark was trumped by the fact that the Hawks are an older team now that is more affected by the wear and tear of this series. They are now 0-4 in games after those extended overtime games, and there's no doubt that they've been lethargic in those games. It's tough for them to recover. So even though they have the verve or whatever to, you know, kind of come through, you saw it at the end. They kind of got their legs under them and played better, but they're really affected. You know, they are on average 2 years older per man, which is really significant than the Ducks. I mean, they are the older team out there. They have an older player on each one of their top three lines. Hossa is no doubt affected in 10 games after he's played 20 minutes. He is 1 point and he's a -8. In games when he's better rested, he's like a +12, and he's got 23 points in 24 games. He's so much more effective when he's rested, and I'm saying he's kind of one guy. He's almost like their MVP. As Tulsa goes, kind of the Hawks go. You know, they're 14. They're also, speaking of 14-0, they're 14-0 when he scores a goal, believe it or not. So to me, that's a good example of how the Hawks are kind of the older team, and I think they're just more affected by the wear and tear of this series.
Talking to Mark Potash from the Chicago Sun-Times, Kimmo Tiiminen has been a major disappointment. I guess when you look back on it, blood clots, it hasn't played in almost a year, then comes in here and is thrown into high-leverage situations, really was a problem for him the other night. But what is realistically fair to expect from Trevor Van Riemsdyk if indeed, as Chris Cook just tweeted, he's a realistic option to maybe be on the ice tonight? I mean, if he puts himself in a position where he makes a turnover, how fair is it to go, what are you doing?
Well, that's kind of the difficult situation that Joel Quenneville is in tonight. You know, he could go to Trevor Van Riemsdyk, and I don't think that would necessarily be a bad move, because Kimmo Tiimonen has been such a negative effect on this team, unfortunately. He's a proud guy. He's had a great history in the league. But the fact of the matter is the Hawks felt that with more time, you know, as he came back to hockey, he would get younger, a little bit younger. But, in fact, he's gotten older. He's just not very effective. So I guess what I'm saying is they kind of have – Q almost has nothing to lose because Tiimonen has been such an ineffective player that by bringing in a guy who actually was effective when he played for the Hawks but hasn't played in the NHL in 5 months, it's worth a shot. So it wouldn't surprise me. But again, you'd have to say if something goes wrong, hey, they were going to lose anyway because Tiimonen just has not been very effective, and the Ducks are targeting him. You talk about all the physical nature. There's no doubt that he's been like their key. They probably hit him more than almost anybody else per time on the ice.
Mark, when you look back at how the Hawks lost the other night 45 seconds into overtime, it's such a flurry and such the focus gets shifted right away to game six and it's do or die and everything else that happened. Where do you stand on what Brian Bickell was trying to do, what he did, and do you understand the thought process in trying to get, obviously you want to put the puck at the net and at the same time, it did backfire in a bad way.
Yeah, it was an unfortunate play, but I don't consider it a bonehead play. A bonehead play is a play that if you do it 10 times, it's going to go wrong 8 or 9 times.
Mm-hmm.
This was more of a fluke that the shot was blocked, and it led to an odd man rush the other way. That's a 1 in 10 shot. The Hawks played it the way they normally play it, which is kind of aggressively. They had a goaltender that was on tilt after allowing one of the softest goals you'll ever see in one of the most critical points of a playoff game you'll ever see, and it was worth a shot. It just kind of backfired on them. This is the way the Hawks go, and I'll tell you, as far as bad bounces go, the Hawks in the history of the Joel Quenneville, Kane, and Tays era, they have a huge edge in getting the breaks on those types of plays. So they're very far from even. I would say that Bickell is culpable to some degree because it backfired on him, but I don't consider it a bonehead play.
Potsy, I don't know if you've seen the tweet that's going around with a picture from someone's DVR freezing it right before the game-winning goal, and there's 7 Anaheim Ducks on the ice. Have you heard about that? Did the Hawks express any outrage or, it's over, move on?
I have not seen that. Haven't, to tell the truth, have not heard of that.
Check my Twitter feed when you get done with us.
Yeah, sure.
Because I'm angry.
Yeah, I certainly will, but I think there have been times where the Hawks have had more men on the ice, even in this playoff, and it hasn't been called. So, again, when it comes to breaks like that, the Hawks are kind of still in the plus side overall. So I think there are other ways they could have won that game or won other games in this series. I don't think that's going to be a big deal, but I understand your ire because I understand you.
Mark, I love how you handle Cap. You humor him so well. That was so well done. You deflected that situation. You put water on that such a way. He's inflamed here right now. This Twitter picture has got him so upset.
I'm ticked, man.
You did that so well, Potsy.
This is a Stanley Cup freaking playoffs.
Excellent.
And there's 7 Ducks on the ice.
Okay, Ducks on the pond. I look, Mark, seriously, let's shift gears for a second because before we let you go, I respect your opinion, and I think people want to know what you think about the way this whole thing with the Bears and Ray McDonald went down. We haven't talked about it much on this show today, but certainly, it's a bad look for a franchise that should have known better. That's my take on it. When you look at how things went down, you haven't necessarily written about it. You've had a lot of other things to do. You've been a busy guy. But what was your reaction when Ray McDonald, number one, got into trouble on Monday, and number two, when the Bears did the only thing they really could have done and cut him?
Well, I guess I can't say it was a big surprise, although, he was so almost defiant when we talked to him at that mini camp that maybe it might have been. But to me, it was still a shot worth taking. I don't think they lose that much in this situation other than having some egg on their face at this point in time. The fact of the matter is it happened now and not in, September, October, or November. It's a tough break for Ryan Pace. It doesn't make him look good or the McCaskies, but the fact of the matter is if Pernell McPhee is a good player, if all their draft picks work out, nobody is going to be asking about Ray McDonald once the season starts. And so I'm saying it's a black eye for the organization, for the McCaskies, and for Ryan Pace, but it's not an indelible one. It's one that I think will heal and will blow over if the Bears can find a way to win 7 or 8 games this year.
And do you believe they will win 7 or 8 games? Because if you do, I've got some property to sell you beachfront in Oklahoma.
Yeah, but you know something? If they just show progress and some of their players work out, I think that's the Ray McDonald situation is not going to be an issue. That's more the point.
I agree. If at the end of the year they could be 4-12, 6-10, 7-9, whatever. It won't matter to me if the arrow is pointing up. Do we go, wow, they look like they're professionally coached.
Yeah, sure.
I saw progress in certain guys. That's all I want to see.
Well, you know what? But Mark, here's the thing, though. I don't even think this has much to do with the football or the progress of Ryan Pace or the football operation. What bothered me is that you're the charter franchise, the NFL, and you look around the league and you have one prevailing issue that every team is dealing with, that the league is confronting head-on, and that's domestic violence. And that is a huge issue with every player that is under contract with any NFL team because of the Ray Rice era, if you want to call it that. And teams have a choice. They can either be part of the solution or they can be part of the problem. When you signed Ray McDonald, the Bears chose to be part of the problem. And I think that is, to me, why they have to hold themselves accountable, why they have to address this with more than a 41-word statement, why they have to apologize to their fan base for embarrassing the franchise to this degree. That's why I think it's bigger than just football.
I you know something, David, I absolutely agree with you on that, especially on the subject of accountability. They definitely need to stand up. George McCaskey needs to speak today or soon, and Ryan Pace does too, and address this mistake and just own it and say, we gave it a shot, it didn't work out, we are responsible for this, and we learned a lesson. And there's no doubt they need to say that. I guess my original point is that I don't think this is such a black eye for them that it will stain the organization. I think this is a shot, maybe not even a shot worth taking. I kind of agree with those who said, Kaepernick has on his show that when this thing came down, that they said, why even bother with this at this point? He's not going to put you over the top. Why do it? I have to agree with the people who were in that camp were definitely right on this one.
Potsy, appreciate the knowledge. It's going to be a lot of fun, a raucous atmosphere tonight. It's just a great thing for our city that we have this phenomenal franchise in the Chicago Blackhawks. Win or lose, it's been a great run.
Thanks, Potsy. I thought he was talking about the Cubs.
pretty soon, David.
That's cranking up.
Guys, I appreciate
it. Hey, Potsy, you do go to the game as a fan sometimes, don't you?
What, Hawks games? I can't afford
it. No, Cubs games. Cubs games.
Oh, yeah, absolutely I do. And I will definitely go to see Chris Bryant.
And when the Cubs game goes, 17, 18 innings, you and your son do not leave until it ends, correct?
You never leave a game. The reason you go to a game is just not to see the beginning, but especially to see the end. So there's no reason to leave before the end of a baseball game.
Yeah, don't go with my wife then, ever. See you, Potsy.
See you, Mark.
All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Take care. Appreciate the time. There he is, Mark Potash. I was doing a game last year. There was a rain delay, I think, and then game went long. Anyway, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. Remember the game last year that went to like 2 o'clock in the morning?
Vaguely.
They had a big delay. They didn't start till like 10 at night.
Vaguely.
Potsy was there. He did not leave.
I remember him being there. I remember talking to him about being there. Well, he's a diehard. He's definitely.
I'm a member of Team Potash.
Yeah. He's excellent guy in any beat that he's on.
Hey, get the ultimate experience with the all-new Samsung Curve 4K Ultra HD TV at App in Glenview. With the Samsung 4K Curved Ultra HD, you get the fastest internet and smart TV functions available. Come into App today and see the complete selection of Samsung electronics. Or call them up. Dial it up at 847-544-2228. 847-544-2228 for complete satisfaction, free delivery, a better experience. Shop where we shop. It's App. ABT. App.com, the website. Ask for the one and only, the great Steve Shapiro. App's been pleasing people since 1936. We'll be right back on Cap and Haw.
Tribune Tower, Chicago. This is Cap and Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
Hey, kissing goodbye. It is gone. Oh, I thought he hit the other one hard. That one's in Milwaukee. It hit the front porch of the third house. across Raven Avenue.
That was May 17, 1979, in the 23-22 game. That's Dave Kingman.
And who was the announcer there?
That was Lou Boudreau.
The good kid.
The good kid, who was the father-in-law to who?
The father-in-law to, oh gosh, I'm going to know this when you tell me. I forget.
Denny McClain.
Yes. Okay.
Last 30 game McClain. Winner. Actually won 31 games.
The good kid, Lou Boudreau.
Lou Boudreau. Absolutely. And that was May 17, 1979. He hit three home runs. At the end of that inning, after Steve Onoveras grounded out back to the pitcher, the first baseman spikes the ball and goes into the dugout, and it was Pete Rose.
Number Steve Onoveras wore was?
16.
Yes. All right.
In honor of Eddie Olczyk.
That was pre-Eddie. Yeah. That was pre-Eddie. But I tell you, Cap, you're confusing people a little bit here, okay? We're getting a couple of texts. You're confusing people.
Why?
You're supposed to clarify, not confuse. That was...
He was a Cub there.
Yeah, but that wasn't the home run you're talking about.
No.
The 500 and...
That was 570, the, yeah, 530.
The 600-foot
was as a Met.
Okay, so
in 1976.
That was 3 years earlier.
Correct.
As a Met against Bill Bonham.
Correct.
The former Cub hurler.
Correct.
Then 3 years later, as a Cub wearing good old number 10, King Kong did it again. He nailed that one, which we just heard the good kid announce. He hit it to Milwaukee. And that was in the 23-22 game.
Yeah, that made it 21-19.
Yeah, I remember that game too. I mean, I was 11.
Can you tell me who the starting pitchers were in that game? I didn't look this up. Off of memory,
hold on.
I think I know.
Let me think. Okay, 79 Phillies Cubs.
Yeah.
Carlton versus Rushell.
Nope. You can look it up. I don't know. I haven't looked at the box. But I remember, I believe it was Randy Lurch.
Randy Lurch.
Yeah. For the Phillies. And Dennis Fluorescent Lamp as the Cubs.
Oh, good old number 47. No, 47 was Tidrow. Was Dennis Lamp 46 or 48?
48, I think.
48, Dennis Lamp. Yeah, not...
Dick Tidrow.
Not a great memories of Dennis Lamp. Dick Tidrow was a very good pitcher for the Cubs.
He was.
Yeah, and the Yankees.
Came from the Yankees.
Yeah, those were the days. King Kong had a lot of those kind of home runs. Now, he was a definition of boomer bust. Chris Bryant is not Dave Kingman.
No.
He can hit majestic home runs like Dave Kingman. But I dare say that Chris Bryant is a more disciplined hitter and is going to have a more productive career at the plate. I should look at Dave Kingman's career record before I say that. I think he's going to have a more productive career at the plate in different facets than Dave Kingman. Dave Kingman was... home run or strikeout. That's it.
He was. I remember he.
And an unpleasant man, from what I understand.
Yeah, I actually met him a few years ago. He was on the field at Wrigley, and he was, you wouldn't say gregarious. He wasn't Charles Barkley or Ozzie Guillen, but he was nice. He was fine.
Well, every guy.
But back in the day, didn't he mail a rat up to send a rat in a box up to the press box?
I think that was
to
the
a
case.
Sports writer.
And he was very unpleasant and dismissive and even belligerent to female reporters, if I remember correctly. The story of Dave Kingman, the legend of King Kong.
I think he sent a rat in a box.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's as legend has it. Sully would know, but I think that King Kong definitely did not have the reputation for being a guy who was kind to the media or else. He had 442 career home runs. Have I misspoken, Cap? Am I predicting a career for Chris Bryant that is better than one that resulted in 442 career home runs?
I think he'll hit more than that if he stays healthy.
I'm not laughing, but I think that you're right. I mean, I think I would probably say that too, but it sounds ludicrous to say.
I mean, he's got
when the kid's 23 years old.
Okay, we're in May. He's got
24, 23.
23.
Okay.
He's got 7.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's a realistic expectation for Chris Bryant this season?
22.
Yeah, I'm saying 28.
25. Let's say 25.
Because if he's got, let's assume he hits 5 a month.
Let's say 25 home runs.
Okay. 5 a month
he's
the rest
cool
of the way.
He's going to cool off, isn't he? After the All-Star game?
Is 5 a lot to ask for in a month?
Not
Sammy
from this
hit
guy.
20 in a month.
Not from this guy. Sammy had Fred Flintstone vitamins
he
to
did.
Help him through those
okay.
months.
Let's say he hits 5 a month. 5 in June would give him 12.
Yeah.
That's if he doesn't hit any more this month. 5 in July would give him 17.
I can do the math.
22, 20, that's 27.
Yeah, 27-ish. Plus, they're going to be in contention. A lot of big games, a lot of big hits, a lot of big at-bats. And pitchers are going to pitch him as carefully as they have already. It doesn't matter.
By the way, Sully's correcting me. Dave Kingman's home run. He hit, I think, two in that game, but the one that went 600 feet was off of Tom DeTore, not Bill
Bonham. I already had the Bill Bonham image in my head.
So did I.
In 76?
Yeah.
Okay. Bill Bonham, he would not have given up that.
I would love to see video of that.
Well, ask and you shall receive. I mean, the Twitter machine is amazing.
Twitter, please send me the video of the Dave
Kingman
home run.
So I want to slow down a little bit. I want to take that statement back a little bit. Let's just say I wouldn't compare Chris Bryant to Dave Kingman in any other way except for the majestic home runs. I want to stop short of saying predicting he's going to have a more productive career at the plate, because Kingman did hit 442 homers.
A lot of homers.
That's a lot of home runs. And I don't know that I'm prepared yet to say that Chris Bryant is going to hit 450.
By the way, Mike saying that the 600-foot homer was his third homer of the game. I was there. I remember two. He hit three that day. Take a listen to this. Mike's got it.
Hey, kissing goodbye. It is gone. Oh, I thought he hit the other one hard. That one's in Milwaukee. It hit the front porch of the third house across Raven Avenue. Man, oh man, isn't that something? That is unreal. Kingman's third home run of the ball game, a standing ovation. And let me tell you, it's now 21-19.
Okay, that's good joke.
I'm losing my voice.
That was the one we heard.
Yeah, that was the one from 79. Yeah. 76 is when he hit the one against off the Cubs when he was a Met.
That's the longest one.
That's the longest one. Yeah. This is close, but that's the longest one.
Okay.
So, crazy, crazy. By the way.
Cubs baseball in the late 70s. That's right up my alley.
Right up your alley.
I mean, I grew up, as I've said, people, I was a Cub fan. I was a Cub fan growing up, living and dying with Dave Kingman every day.
So when you go to journalism school.
Yeah.
Do they, like, Ed beat Warnoff. You with a bag of, like,
exactly.
boiling nickels?
They do.
You're no longer a fan.
They aren't nickels, actually, because they're pennies. It's a journalism school, so as little as possible.
They come in and they torture you. They get the fandom out of you.
Yeah, exactly.
And they get your wallet and they take the fan card out.
They do. They take the fan card out.
Right. Was but, little David Haw a member of the diehard Cubs fan club?
No, but I did get I subscribed to the Sporting News at a really young age, and I got another Cub publication. I don't know if it was Vineline. It might have been Vineline, but I don't know if it went back that far. I got some Cubby publication when I was a kid growing up.
That is so funny.
And I remember going to the Cub game for the first time, and like every kid does. It was like a big deal. I loved the Cubs when I was a kid. I loved the Cubs growing up. I loved watching them because you come home from school, and they were on.
Now he's just immune.
I mean, I'm not immune to everything. I mean, you get a little bit excited about certain things, but I don't root for the Cubs.
You ever
anymore.
Go to a game in a jersey? I think
no, I know that's not going to happen.
Croak.
That's not going to happen.
We have some breaking news from Dan Wiederer, a friend of mine from the Chicago Tribune. Yeah. I don't know if you know Dan. I should introduce you to him. Good man. Bears owner. Now, Brooks said yesterday there's no way this happens, and I said there would. Bears owner George McCaskey has agreed to meet with reporters following today's OTA practice on the Ray McDonald saga.
48 hours later, it's a smart move.
No question about it.
Should have done it the day it happened, but at least, you know, made himself accountable. This is better late than never. He owes that to everybody, and I think that's smart.
Kenny and Villa Park, Matt and River North, both of you will be participating in the show at some point in the next few minutes, but we'll get to some Ray McDonald stuff as well. So all coming up, it's Cap and Haw, and you're watching Comcast Sportsnet and listening to WGN Plus.
It's the Cap and Haw Show on WGN Plus and Comcast Sportsnet.
The thing that impressed me after talking to them was the support system. They go to almost all of his games, even the out-of-town games. They're there for him. Came from a strong two-parent upbringing, which, sad to say, isn't all that common anymore these days. And even discounting what a parent had to say, I came away impressed, like I said, with the support system that he had.
George McCaskey, as he talked about why he signed Ray McDonald and talking to his parents and doing his due diligence, which did not include talking to the other side, the alleged victim
Well, not only not talking to the other side, but explaining why
he didn't.
He didn't. It did not reflect well on him, and I think the Bears, because he basically cast doubt on victims' versions of their, you know, abuse, and I think that's an unfortunate turn. And the words when they come back at somebody after something like this happens, they, you know, it is embarrassing. And you know, George McCaskey's not a bad guy.
No, he's a good guy.
I don't
guy.
Think either one of us would say that. I mean, I think that there are times when, you know, good people make bad decisions. We both have been there. I think
no question.
When you are stuck in that situation, you hope to have you hope to have the integrity to be able to acknowledge that you were wrong and to accept what comes with that. And that's, you know, when you're in a public role, when you're in a public job, you've got to own up to this.
And that's why him meeting with the media today, which he will do at OTAs, is a good thing.
Better late than never. Yeah, I think that's good. I think the way they handled it initially, it was Memorial Day. I know that there was a holiday. People were gone. Putting Ryan Pace out there to be the one who issued the statement, I think, was a poor decision.
Should have come from George McCaskey.
Yeah, it was his face on this move. And as we said when I asked Mark Potash the question, Cap, I think this all boils down to you have a choice as an NFL franchise to be a part of the solution or the problem when it comes to eradicating domestic violence from the league. You're never going to be able to do it alone, any one team. It's going to be a problem, and it's going to be an issue. And are there other issues bigger than that? I don't know that there have been in the last year or so. So the Bears chose to be part of the problem when they invited Ray McDonald into the organization. And even though he didn't play it down, even though his tenure lasted 62 days, you have to live with the fact that you consciously made that decision. Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator, John Fox, the head coach, Ryan Pace, the general manager, and George McCaskey, the chairman. Everybody who was party to that decision, I think, should apologize for their role in it.
Who do you believe should be meeting the media today besides George? All of them?
No. I mean, they can. I mean, when I say apologize, maybe that's a bit. I think an apology from the chairman on behalf of everybody, on behalf of the Chicago Bears.
We got this one wrong.
Yeah.
We'll wear it. We'll move on from this. And yeah. We'll be better the next time.
I got an interesting email from somebody who's part of a domestic abuse shelter, I believe, or an organization to fight domestic abuse. They suggested that, you know, the Bears could donate what they were going to pay Ray McDonald to a cause in the name of, you know, domestic abuse. And I think that is an idea. They need to do something that is – that makes them look like anything. Look, bottom line is, I've heard from many Bears fans, all we care about is winning. You know, it didn't cost him anything. He was great in the 3-4 defense. All these things are, you know, fine. Football-wise, it was never about football with Ray McDonald. I mean, football-wise, you put on the tape, he's going to be a guy that his football skill set you want as part
of your
defense.
Thing is,
but this it goes beyond that.
The amazing thing is he's getting a one-year deal here for, what, $1.5 million?
Million dollars. Million, yeah.
Okay. If he plays like everyone thinks he would have played because he's a good football player and he kept his nose clean, he would have probably signed in the offseason 5 years, somewhere around, Pernell McPhee got $35 million.
He's a 30-year-old player too, but he wouldn't have gotten maybe that long. But okay. He would have
signed a very big
lucrative
deal.
Lucrative. You could have set yourself up. He's already made $13 million in the NFL. He had an opportunity. He squandered it because he couldn't stay out of trouble. He couldn't stay out of California. And yesterday it was brought to light that the 911 tape was released. And here's a guy with his track record who, I know there's versions of this and versions of that. The police report, the police claim they arrested him. It's a misdemeanor charge because he made contact with the mother of his child, a woman with whom he has history.
Allegedly, yeah.
He's allegedly under the influence of alcohol, mm-hmm. or at least drinking. It's 3 a.m. You're demanding things to be – there's a report that he broke down a bedroom door. His driver claims there was no contact, according to McDonald's attorney. The 911 call was not made apparently by the woman who he allegedly abused, but by her mother who he called, and this is what it sounded like.
They're going to connect you with the Santa Clara Police Department for me, okay? Okay. Is anybody doing anything?
Tracy, thank you, dispatch. Stand on the line with me, okay? The problem is you called 911 on your cell phone, so you're going to get bounced around until we can figure out who's going to handle this, okay? So stay on the line with me, okay?
Okay, but I'm freaking out. My daughter,
I understand. And who is it that she's in domestic with, the father of the child?
Yes.
Okay, just one second.
He's drunk.
Okay, just one second. I have the mother on the phone reporting domestic with her daughter and the child's father. She gave an apartment of...
gated community. I'm all the way in, like, Los Banos. I'm not even there. She just called me and asked me to please call 911 because she's trying to escape with the infant.
Yeah, she's trying to escape with the infant, and that's the extent of it. And I just, without even having more details, I mean, if you're Ray McDonald and you have this sort of track record, is visiting, even if you want to see your child, is visiting your child at 3 in the morning at a place that has been, you know, an environment that's been hostile in the past, a good idea?
Bad.
You are making one bad decision after another. The pattern of behavior is what is most troubling to me. And for the Bears to compromise themselves and to put that ahead of, you know, making the right call in an age where, you know, social issues are as prominently, you know, people care about them in pro sports as much as they ever have. I just thought this was a bad move for the Bears all the way around. I said it from day one. I wasn't the only one to say it from day one. This was the least surprising news of the offseason that Ray McDonald let the Bears down. You could have seen this coming the day they signed him, and many of us did. It was inevitable. Guy's bad news. His parents don't think so, but come on.
You think he gets another shot?
No. No. I don't think he gets another shot. I think the Cowboys are done redeeming players this offseason. Maybe I'm wrong, but he's 30, and... I don't know that this the narrative of this, even though his lawyer protests and his mother, who great job from Dan Weider and Rich Campbell tracking down Ray McDonald's mom last night in the Chicago Tribune this morning. There's parents. If your parents aren't going to stand behind you.
Who will?
Who will? That's what makes the George McCaskey saying I called his parents thing so laughable. What did you expect them to say?
How about this? Brooke is in for you yesterday.
Yep.
So she and her friend, I can't remember the girl's name, went to the Bulls game the night the Cavs eliminated them. So the game's a blowout, so Brooke and her friend go down to one of the bars in the United Center to get food and something to drink. They sit down. And they're sharing a pretzel and whatever else they got, and these two gentlemen walk over and sit down. Can we share your pretzel with you? Obviously making advances on Brooke, who's attractive, and her friend, who's attractive. The guy said,
so Brooke is with a female friend.
Correct.
And they're down. Okay.
And the two guys come over and make the moves on him. This is last Thursday night.
Right.
On the 14th.
We could go Thursday. Yeah.
And on the 14th of May. And Brooke says to the guy, what do you do for a living? And he says, I'm a construction worker. And Brooke goes, nah, I don't think so. You actually look like a football player. And when the picture flashed up that it was Ray McDonald arrested, she called her friend and goes, I want you to look at this picture, and I want you to tell me who that is. She goes, that's the guy that was hitting on us. It was Ray McDonald, she believes, and his friend hitting on them at the Bulls game.
Wow. Well, that it's a good thing she shot him down.
Yeah.
Because I just think his track record so you're suggesting that he probably would have found trouble in Chicago anyway? I don't know.
Would it have shocked you?
No, I don't, because I think that you look at his pattern of behavior and the NFL locker rooms. The NFL is not a place necessary for the meek. I get that. And NFL rosters are full of guys who you wouldn't necessarily want to introduce to, you know, your sister. I get that. But when things rise to the level where, you know, this is you have a situation that's documented. You have a situation that you can stay away from. The Bears willingly entered this territory. You know, they knowingly got into a business agreement with a guy that was destined to disappoint
all right,
them.
What do you say to people who say, look, stop talking to me about character and win some football games? I'm not saying I feel that way. I'm just asking
Cap,
you that
if the Bears
question.
Were one player away from the Super Bowl, I could understand it. If they were on the precipice
the
of contending for the NFC North title, I could say, okay, sometimes you have to sometimes you will make these compromises in the name of competition. Okay, the Bears are, you know, the Bears are one player away from being 7-9.
So what do you say about the Cowboys?
So at what cost, victory? I mean, really?
Okay, what do you say about the Cowboys signing Greg Hardy?
I don't like that either. I think there are better ways to win.
They might be one player away.
Listen, I said I could understand it. I wouldn't say I would condone it.
Okay.
I think you have to decide, and you can talk to NFL executives who would be on both sides of this equation, and we have. Any organization, whether you're an NFL team, a newspaper, a television station, a tire shop, what are you going to stand for? What are you going to stand for? What matters to you? What are you going to prioritize? Now, you cannot be naive. Ben Roethlisberger's gotten second chances. There are other players in the league that have gotten second chances. Ray McDonald wasn't on his second chance in Chicago. That's a misnomer.
What's it tell you about
this? He had more than – hold on. Let me say that again.
What, have you been arrested 4 times?
This was not his second chance. Stop saying that, people. The Bears were not his second chance. A guy with that history doesn't deserve another chance. What are you going to stand for as an organization? And I hope that George McCaskey articulates that today when he meets the media and apologizes for trusting Ray McDonald's mommy and daddy.
The Seahawks drafted Frank Clark in the second round, who has something in his past with domestic assault. What does that say about them?
Not much. Not much at all.
Right.
Because if I'm running a draft and I've got 648 players to choose from, and I'm starting to eliminate people on my draft board, you know what I look at? Okay, in this day and age, how many times have they been arrested? What is their history? Do they have any domestic violence red flags? Are they prone to some sort of behavior? And then you can do better. You can always do better. If you're talking about a guy that's going to end up, you know, as somebody who's going to have somebody else call 911 on them, and you're going to be listening to the tape of a frightened voice, afraid of what that person is going to do to them based on their personal history.
But the funny thing is, Jerry Angelo told us this, Olin told me it himself. There were teams that had do not draft next to Olin Kruth's name. That's why he was there in the third round, and he became a perennial Pro Bowler and the best leader in the locker room, and also one of the toughest guys the Bears have ever had.
People change. Every case is different.
He's a family guy, 5 kids, wonderful man.
They're going to be exceptions to every rule, Cap. I mean, I'm not telling you that's not possible, and I think that you have to, you know, believe in redemption, but you also have to be smart. And, you know, that was a calculated risk on their part for a young team on the way trying to build through the draft, right?
Mm-hmm.
They justified that in some way. I don't know how the Bears in the world, in their minds, justified this guy at this stage of their growth. It was a good idea for this regime.
Agreed. 312-235-2525. We'll get some of your calls and talk to Mark Gonzalez at 55 past the hour. We'll be right back.
From Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is Cap and Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
All right, time for our You Decide feature, sponsored by the great people at Wintrust Community Banks, where you can get your Cubs or White Sox debit card and your Cubs or White Sox themed checking accounts.
Yeah, see, like when I was 11 years old watching Dave Kingman club home runs one after another, I was dreaming about the day I would have Chicago Cubby checks.
Not anymore.
And a debit card. Although in those days, they didn't know what a debit card was.
I have the Cubs and White Sox debit cards. I have both
of them. I'm sure you do.
Both of them.
So right now, it looks like the Cubs is more full of
solvency,
wealth, and
exactly.
Hope.
Flush with more cash.
Yes.
Anyway, so our You Decide feature.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a chance. You decide.
Okay.
You could buy a stock. Stock is fairly low priced. One might be a little bit more expensive than the other, but you get the future of Bryce Harper or the future of Chris Bryant.
That's a good one.
Two Las Vegas natives.
That's a good one. Two Vegas natives who played. I found this interesting. They started playing together or against each other when they were 8 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
Think about back when you were in Little League. You knew the 8-year-old or 9-year-old in that league who was like, okay, he's going places.
Mm-hmm.
They had two of these guys who were either, you know, then they were probably all-star teammates.
Three. Joey Gallo.
Yeah, the third one.
From the Rangers, their top prospect.
Wow. So right now, decide who you would want a piece of the future more, Bryant or Harper. That's a tough one because Bryant has the experience, or Harper has the experience
at the major league level.
At the major league level, he's younger than Chris Bryant by a year. He's right now, Bryce Harper's only 22 years old, so he's a grizzled veteran, basically.
Crazy. He came up at 18.
Chris Bryant has the benefit of he went to San Diego. He's got the college degree, a little more refined. I think if you're a general manager and you're saying, okay, which one of these guys do I envision being the face of my franchise for the next 10 years? And I'm that general manager, I'm taking Chris Bryant. I'm taking Chris Bryant because I like more about the type of personality he projects. I like more about the way that he, it's not all about how he represents your franchise, but if you had to have a tiebreaker, it's how he represents your franchise.
He's not ever going to be quoted in a post game going, "That's a clown question."
I don't think so. And as polarizing as Bryce Harper is, I think you either love him or you hate him. And there are a lot of people that hate him. I don't think that Chris Bryant kind of yet generates that sort of reaction.
People just look and go,
you admire him.
A hell of a player.
You admire the fact that he has the approach that you want. That
class.
You look at, you can take your kids to the game and you point at this guy and you say, that's the way you do it. When you hit a 477-foot home run, you run around the bases and you say, I didn't watch it. And he didn't watch it. And that's the kind of superstar that baseball needs. And I think that's the one that I would want if I were picking between those two guys, either though, there's no wrong decision.
I'm taking Chris Bryant for the exact same reasons. Plus, he's my favorite player.
Plus, production-wise, they're going to be pretty even.
Agreed. Wintrust loves a good rivalry. Who doesn't? I know I do. Here in Chicago, we've got one of the best. Cubs versus White Sox. North side versus South side. Blue versus black. Put your money where your heart is, Chicago. And decide for your side with a Cubs or White Sox checking account from your local Wintrust Community Bank. It even comes with your very own Cubs or Sox debit card. I've got them both, folks. Right there, baby. Cubs, White Sox. Sox is a little overdrawn right now. Cubs flush with cash. Okay? That's the deal right there. How cool is that? Plus, you can cheer for your team by tweeting or Instagramming with hashtag DecideCubs or hashtag DecideSox. When you choose, either online or in the bank, you'll help Wintrust donate up to $500,000 to Cubs and White Sox charities. Follow along online, see whose fans are cheering the loudest, and learn more at Wintrust.com/YouDecide. Banking services provided by Wintrust Community Banks, Chicago Cubs, Chicago White Sox trademarks used with permission. Member FDIC. By the way, yesterday in the newsroom, so Josh Donaldson hits the big home run.
Yeah.
Ryan McGuffey, Mr. White
Sox
fan.
The second one.
The walk-off.
Yeah.
He takes his Sox hat and he throws it across the newsroom, displayed a better arm than anybody on the White Sox staff, including Chris Sale. He was so ticked, grabbed his bag, left. Gone. Furious.
Without a word?
Nothing.
Not even goodbye?
Gone. See ya. Never got a goodbye from Guff. Nothing.
He went home with Hathead. Because he left the hat hanging.
He was.
Did it hit anything? Did the hat hit anyone?
It zinged by a couple producers, but didn't.
Oh,
hit
they wouldn't appreciate that.
They'd give him a beating.
Oh, that would not be good.
But
or pretty.
Yeah, Ryan McGuffey.
If they could catch him,
very upset White
Sox.
Fast
guy. Man. He was a fast guy back in the day.
Back in the day.
Back in the paw days.
Put on a few pounds since then, but anyway, we'll take a quick timeout. 3-1-2. Oh, we won't take a timeout. Okay, sorry there, Mikey. I thought you said we
no,
had to take a break.
Come on, man. We got to take a phone call.
Yeah, Guff, he's still a strong man. But
yeah,
he's...
so the hat didn't hit anybody.
No.
I wouldn't recommend throwing hats around any newsroom, though.
No. He was a very upset
Might get it thrown
character.
Back at you in certain newsrooms. You never know. Did it knock over your Chris Bryant shrine?
It did not. Okay. I have that That's thing good. Completely guarded 24 hours a day.
That's a clown question, bro.
Love that, Mikey. Let's go to the phones, all right? We got a cornucopia of
let's
sports
go to,
things
let's
going
go to, Let's go to Nate in Uptown first, though.
Nate in Uptown is first. Hey, Nate, what's going on there, Sparkles?
Hey, Nate.
I'm doing good, hey, you guys, I got a good trade for you.
Okay.
On top of what's been going on, Syndergaard for Castro.
They're not going to do that.
Who, the Mets or the Cubs?
The Mets. They wouldn't do that, would they?
Oh, I think they would.
I
think about it. I mean, they're not gonna give us Harvey or DeGrom, probably.
I don't know, Cap. Do you think they would give up? Do they want Castro?
Jim Bowden proposed a trade, or maybe Steve Phillips, one of the two. I think it was Jim Bowden, said Cubs trade Starlin Castro to the Mets for a back end of the rotation reliever type named Montero, Rafael Montero, I think, and Syndergaard or Steven Matz, who's their top prospect.
Are you that desperate to get rid of Starlin Castro, Nate?
Well, I tell you what, a 270, a 280 hitter, he is an average, maybe a little bit above average. You send him, you get that prospect, he's going to solidify the rotation, and then hope for Baez, move Addison Russell to short.
Thanks for the phone call. Interesting idea. I don't like the idea of a trading Castro. I've been on record with that. I got some guy tweeting me or texting me or both about my love affair with Starlin Castro. I just don't think that you want to get rid of a guy who is not an average major league hitter. He's much better than that, Cap. He's not having the greatest start. He's cooled off a little bit. But I still think that you want him to be part of your team when you are winning. You are winning. And I think when you win a playoff berth, a division, whatever, that Starlin Castro is going to be part of that
reason. So the Mets call you, give you the denominator.
Well, that's different, right?
Syndergaard's regarded as better.
I would, if I'm going to engage in a conversation about bolstering my starting rotation, which is all you're worried about, right? I would leave it with the younger players, the prospects package, and try to stay away from my
major
league.
They need an everyday shortstop now. You got three.
Phillies don't. Phillies don't.
No, the Phillies don't. I'm talking
about. But I would still – I would prefer the Cole Hamels.
You want a 31-year-old guy,
yeah,
as opposed to a cheap, cost-controlled Noah Syndergaard.
If it costs me, you know, breaking up a potential offensive – consistent player, or offensively consistent player in my lineup, yeah. I mean,
okay,
rather have, for a pennant race right now, you would rather have one of the Mets' young arms, I'm not talking about Matt Harvey, or Cole Hamels.
Cole Hamels.
Okay! That's what I'm talking about.
But they're talking about long-term.
And you don't have to give up Starlin Castro.
Okay, what if
you don't have to give up Starlin Castro. He's 25 years old.
What if they said to you, we'll give you the denominator, National League Rookie of the Year, or Syndergaard, your pick, we want Addison Russell.
No.
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 Okay, so you're expecting to add a top-of-the-rotation ace, and what do you want to give him? Arismendi Alcantara?
I'm giving him a package of prospects that aren't yet.
They don't want prospects. They're trying to win now.
I'm talking about the Philly. We'll go back and forth. I don't know that I would be that eager to trade Castro. That's my bottom line. Everybody seems to be eager to get rid of Starlin Castro so they can, again, get more playing time for players and prospects who might one day grow up to be as good of a hitter as Starlin Castro is or can be. I don't know that I'm in that big of a rush. I think that if you can get the Phillies desperate to take a couple of your prospects closer to the trade deadline and not disrupt your major league team, which is doing some very interesting things. It's been a fun year so far. You're in it. You're in it. You're going to stay in it.
The Philadelphia Phillies tell you they want Baez and more. You doing that? Because he's starting to
Baez
figure it out.
And more or Baez and more?
More, M-O-R-E.
M-O-R-E, yeah. Okay. Who's more? Etuan Moore? If they want Baez, bye-bye, Javi. See you later.
You realize you might be giving up a 25-homer, 90-RBI
guy. You
got to
give up something. You got to give up something.
You'd do that over giving up Starlinski.
I think that I might. Call me crazy. I think that I might be more willing to give up Baez and a package of prospects for Cole Hamels than I would be for Castro. And I know people are going to kill me for that. You don't know a lot about Baez yet. There's an unknown there that would scare me into saying, I'm going to sell high now while he's maybe turning the corner in Iowa. We can make people believe he's really turned the corner. Trade him. Get your pitcher. You're starting rotation short up.
And what if you look up in 3 years from now, that guy's got 27 bombs and 100 knocked in and playing solid defense, and you're like,
how do you know? You're never going to know. You're always going to be uncertain. Trades are risk.
Is Starlin ever going to be better than he is right now?
It's pretty. Yeah, he has been for you. He has been for you. So everyone wants to get rid of Starlin Castro. That's what I don't get in this town sometimes.
All right, we've got White Sox baseball coming up on CSN in about 3 minutes. We will continue, so you can catch us at WGNPlus.com. We'll continue that show all the way up to noon, and they will replay the entire 3 hours at noon on CSN+. All right, White Sox baseball's next.